Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the intensifying Israeli bombardment of Gaza in response to missiles launched by Hamas. Former Middle East negotiator Aaron David Miller, who served 6 secretaries of state, joins us to discuss the regional implications of this latest confrontation between these two implacable enemies and what diplomatic moves might be possible to avert further military escalation. Then we'll go to northern Afghanistan to speak with author and journalist Robert Young Pelton, who has covered the 11-year-long war from the beginning. He filmed the original deployment of special forces and the Taliban prisoner breakout, in which a CIA officer was killed and the American Taliban John Walker Lind was captured. We'll get a perspective on what U.S. presence will remain after 2014 as the remaining troops and contractors build a series of permanent Fort Apaches in this hostile and increasingly lawless land. Then finally, we will hear from Graham Fuller, a former CIA Kabul station chief who was the vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council. We will continue the discussion on Afghanistan and look into the current soap opera surrounding the scandal-plagued former head of the CIA, whose testimony made fools out of Republican leaders like John McCain and Fox News, who have been grandstanding and beating the drum on Benghazi for months, trying to turn a minor tragedy into a major issue. Joining us now is Aaron David Miller, who's a vice president and distinguished scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. He served 6 secretaries of state as Middle East negotiator in Democratic and Republican administrations, and he's the author of the forthcoming book, Can America Have Another Great President? Welcome to Background Briefing, Aaron David Miller.
Pleasure to be here.
So you're calling for restraint on the part of Israel, as well as urging Egypt to press Hamas to control the jihadis. This situation surely is putting enormous pressure not just on Hamas, but Israel's getting a black eye, I think, in public opinion, which they did last time around in 2008. Things are very tense for King Abdullah next door in Jordan. And the Egyptian people are apparently much more radical and against the Camp David Accords than the government itself is, which you point out in an article in CNN, need a $4 billion loan from the IMF. So none of this looks like it's very welcome to anybody that has a stake in this.
Well, no, that's all true. But so what else is new? I mean, the Middle East has been broken, angry, and dysfunctional now for years. And over the last couple of years, it's even become even more so. And these problems, whether it's Iran's pursuit of a nuclear weapon, the Arab-Israeli conflict, the Arab Spring / winter, and imploding Syria, and even the situation in Gaza, has no solution. There are only outcomes to this. And that was clearly the case in 08 and 09. It led to 4 years of relative tranquility, but Israel and Hamas have no real modus vivendi beyond a de facto sort of stand down. Their military, security, and political goals are fundamentally at odds with one another. So I would suspect, even though the objective would be a longer-term truce, it's going to be very difficult to get it. It's going to be very hard because Hamas will want things. They'll want Rafah to be reestablished, and that's a crossing point which the Israelis have closed on the Egyptian border with Gaza. They're not going to agree to shut down all their smuggling efforts through the tunnels. They'll want a cessation of all targeted killings on the part of the Israelis. So I think you've got a serious problem. At the same time, neither side wants to escalate this into a Operation Cast-Lead 2008-2009 redux. So, as I mentioned at the outcome, this is a question of management. There are no end states here that will guarantee peace and stability.
Well, you mentioned in your article at CNN, Aaron David Miller, that there are lots of newbies within the Hamas umbrella, one of whom is Jaish al-Islam, which played a role in the August 8 attack that left 16 Egyptian soldiers dead in the Sinai. My understanding is that the killing of the Hamas military wing leader, Ahmed al-Jabari, that at least there are some reports in Israel that he was actually more cooperative and was trying to restrain some of these splinter groups.
Well, there's one report I've seen by Aluf Ben, which argues that he was Israel's subcontractor. I quote that in a forthcoming article of my own in Foreign Policy this week. I think he may have outlived his usefulness. I think somewhere along the line, the Israelis no longer saw him as someone who had a stake in in essentially keeping things quiet, he was clearly a very important figure in the outreach to try to secure longer-range missiles with greater range, the Fajr 5s. He was a clear part of that. And I think the Israelis calculated, and they tried to kill him at least once before in 08, that he no longer was useful. And they wanted to send an unmistakable signal that high-trajectory fire into Israel was simply not going to be tolerated, at least this round. So I think that's clearly one of the reasons. And as far as the jihadis in Gaza, I think they did play an important role in testing Israeli deterrence and Israel's limitations for accepting this high-trajectory weapons fire. And I think Hamas was either unable or unwilling to control them. So it's one of the factors. And Sinai, of course, has slipped beyond the capacity of either Israel or the Palestinians or the Egyptians to control. And Sinai is a source of smuggling. It's a launching point for terrorist attacks. So I think this is just another indication that there's not going to be a neatly packaged solution to this. And if you're looking for one, I think you picked the wrong conflict analyst.
Well, obviously this is isolating the Palestinian Authority and making them look impotent. But who really runs Hamas, or does anybody run it? I mean, it comes out of the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood, yet the Iranians apparently have always had an influence, and they've just lost their bases or pulled out of Syria because of what's happening to their Sunni brethren in Syria. And it's just difficult to know, and given what you've just told us, Aaron David Miller, that there are all these newbie groups within the Hamas umbrella, and of course the word in Arabic means religious zeal. So I guess could you describe them or compare them, say, to the Quds force in Iran? Are they religious zealots?
I think they're the religious manifestation of Palestinian nationalism, now charged with governing a polity that's very difficult to govern. And I think it's quite clear who's in charge. The balance of power has shifted toward the internal leadership, Ismail Haniyeh and others inside the organization. The loss of Damascus clearly has weakened the external leadership. Khaled Mishal, who was much more interested not in a solution to the Arab-Israeli conflict, but in a political strategy. But he's been weakened. The internal leadership, the military wing inside the country has strengthened. And I think Hamas runs a pretty tight ship, actually. And frankly, given their new responsibilities, given what they want, it has been forced in large part because of Morsi's election, because of the dependence now on Gulf money, to essentially adopt a much more pragmatic line. That's not the case with respect to their policies toward Israel. But even there, they understand they cannot deal the Israelis a strategic blow, and the Israelis know and are not out to fundamentally eliminate the organization because they know they can't. So again, we're back into a neither black nor white outcome. There's going to be a lot of gray here. And I think in terms of the broader implication, my last comment is that it points up the real conundrum here. I mean, Abbas can't settle with the Israelis. He's too weak, and Hamas won't. And Israel plays its own unhelpful role with respect to this process as well. So you have a situation in which, unless there's some fundamental turning, some recalculation on the part of one or more of the parties, you're going to end up seeing these outcomes rather than permanent comprehensive solutions.
But just in closing, if the Gulf money is sustaining Hamas, that wouldn't that exclude Iran as a major sponsor?
Because, you know, in this part of the region, as in American politics, people hedge their bets. Mm-hmm. They basically keep all of their options open. It's certainly possible for Hamas to receive money from the UAE and the Qataris. Maybe not as much from the Saudis, given their allergic reaction to the Iranians, but Iran is a key weapons supplier of these longer-range rockets. So, no, Hamas is, again, trying to have it always in both ways.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Aaron David Miller.
You're welcome.
And I've just been speaking with Aaron David Miller, who is a vice president and distinguished scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. He served under six Secretary of States as a Middle East negotiator in Democratic and Republican administrations, and he's the author of the forthcoming book, Can America Have Another Great President? And we're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back and then go to northern Afghanistan.